The house was nearly empty. Without knowing quite how, I could see there was a maid in the kitchen at the other end of the mansion, cleaning some pots. There were a couple of other servants, but nobody else. As I drifted across the room near the ceiling, admiring the molded roses, I became strangely aware of some familiar circumstance. Long-buried memories re-entered my mind. I fumed around and looked down from the ceiling and saw a large bed in the room and a person lying in it, breathing heavily and irregularly. He was a very old drone, spluttering and at times not breathing at all. I felt a faint sympathy for this corpse-like person who appeared to be dying, and I wondered why nobody was by his side. Then, with a sudden jolt, I recognized the man. It was me. I was lying in bed dying, alone in a huge sumptuous mansion, deserted by everyone. I wondered what kind of life I had led. I could feel my desperate loneliness. Then I noticed a thin thread attaching me to this expiring corpse. What was curious was that I seemed to occupy the subtle body of the dying man with my own subtle body. I was aware of two people, one me dying and one me from the future watching myself. When I pondered what I must have done to end my life so wretchedly, deserted by family and friends, if in that life I had ever had any, there emerged strange memories of a selfish life, of me I striving to enrich myself financially with little regard for other people. The result was a pile of bricks shaped into a mansion with plenty of land surrounding it, but there was no real wealth in my life, only emptiness. This was a powerful lesson which I knew I would never have to repeat. I began staring into a deep black void, then remembered who I was now. I started to chant my mantra, but it had no effect other than to toss me around in the dark, empty space. It turned me upwards and then thrust me away again, and then it spat me out like a huge monster spitting out some indigestible prey. My old self from a previous life, next headline. Revolution, 1977, no exact date. This had been an extraordinary time. I had been on work experience as a therapist in a psychiatric hospital. I was introduced to my supervisor, a lady in her early 40s, and the moment we were introduced I felt her icy hostility towards me. I found out later that her parents had been murdered in a concentration camp, and I figured that my being German was the cause of clung to me like a drowning man, threatening to pull me down into an unimaginable hell, so he wouldn't be alone any longer. I struggled to shrug off this wretchedness without much success. I was sucked with two equals irresistible force towards the center of the earth, with something like a monstrous leech clinging around my neck. I didn't want to have any part in this, but I was powerless to escape. If I had been dreaming it would have been just a nightmare, but this was real, super real. Then I remembered, I could still wake up to escape. So I did. With my eyes wide opened I enjoyed the relief of sitting upright in my bed, in the small 10 feet by 10 feet bedroom of our modest 20th century terraced house. I had a young family, a wife and a child who loved me. I had a modest income, but how fortunate I was. How blessed. I saw my wife asleep next to me and felt intense affection for my little daughter in the room next door, barely 4 months old. I was the happiest man in the world. I decided to close my eyes and devote some quality time to meditation. Within a few minutes, visions like heavy dreams began to cloud the clarity of my mind. For minutes I fought them off and began to wonder whether it would be better to get up and make some tea. I decided to battle on and fight off the sleepiness and the impending dreams which tried to get the better of me. Finally I gave up the fight and succumbed, but when I woke up again it was in my dream. I was on a horse charging through fields with other people around me, hunting. I also saw scenes of a bloody battle 200 or 300 years in the past. It was as if the spirit of my wretched past life had returned to haunt me. I didn't want any part of this, I wanted out. When I awoke in my bed again I did not try to remember the details of this experience, and I was grateful that my brain blotted it out. Her reaction. By my mere presence I imagined I had brought to the surface a lifetime of hurt and resentment. Her hostility was open and blatant. Everybody on the staff was aware of it. It manifested itself in malicious behavior. She sabotaged my work and undermined my sessions with my patients. As hard as I tried to build a dialogue with her, it was impossible. As a consequence, I was left feeling depressed and depleted when returning home from work. Then, one morning, I became suddenly aware in the most dramatic way possible of the real reason for her enmity. I'd had a very bad night with long spells of sleeplessness while trying to figure out how to appease my hostile supervisor, and finally I gave up and decided to meditate. It was 4:30 a.m. After about an hour and a half, my focus went and tiredness sabotaged my concentration until I fell asleep. Almost as soon as I drifted off, I was jolted into waking consciousness. I found myself walking along a squelchy path with a group of 20 or 30 people. The excitement that I was fully awake in another dimension was muted by the fact that it was raining and I felt the clammy chill of wet clothes on my skin. This was most unusual. This was a physical experience. I looked at the broadly knitted pattern of my woolen coat, which went down to my knees. My legs were covered with handmade leather boots dragging me along the soggy road. I felt uncomfortable, ill at ease. I was carrying a sword in my belt with an open blade. I felt sick with depression. The most curious sensation was that there were two of me, the observer and the observed. There was the me studying the scene and noting down every detail, like the color of my boots, the overcoat like a short blanket covering my shoulders and held together by a bold brass brooch, the me peering out from underneath my hat into the wet landscape, observing a troop of people marching in loose formation along the sodden mud path in driving rain. Then there was the other me, experiencing the wet and the wind in my face. I carried the images of slaughter with me. I myself had slain a man in a castle we had raided. I could still see the smoke from the blaze. An easy death. It was just getting light. I don't know who the person was, only that he confronted us with fear in his face. Without a thought, I sunk my blade into him. Now I felt sick. The lord of the manor did not die humiliated. I stood apart just watching. Part of me was sickened by what I witnessed. His clothes were ripped from him and he was thrown a sack to cover himself, to feel how the poor people dressed. I was the only one who could not join in, and it was I he stared at, not pleading for his life, not begging, just full of hatred. Whatever anyone did, he looked only at me. And his eyes were telling me, "You will burn in hell for this." Not everybody was killed. The lord's wife and daughters were spared, but they were beaten and humiliated and then driven from their palace. The few things they packed were taken away from them. They tried to organize a couple of horses and a cart, but the horses had been killed by one of our group. The only thing they were left with were the clothes they wore. Then the place was burned down. The servants were spared. "You are free," one of our group shouted, but the servants weren't happy about it. They were furious, cursing and swearing at us. Even when we organized a cart with loot from the house and insisted that this was their payment for their years as slaves, they were not happy. I tried to deal with my discomfort by thinking about all the injustices and hardships my people had suffered over the years. All the cruelty and exploitation. I recalled our children starving while these people lived in luxury. I thought of our humiliation and the senseless disregard these rich people held for our lives. I hated the Lord. I hated him for making me see that however just our cause felt, I did not feel right about it. When I took up arms and joined the peasants, I did so because I felt anger at the injustice and exploitation. I was a young man with a respectable trade in my village. I had no hardship, and yet I was carried along by the emotion and the cause to restore justice. When the Lord lay naked in his own blood with a sack thrown over him, he stared at me still, even though his life had gone. His hate-filled eyes still haunted me as our group stomped back through the mud. 55 With this I sat up in my bed. There was hardly a break in consciousness. I felt as if I had just come in from the rain, from the muddy path, with the wet heavy clothes still clinging to my body. I felt sick. I felt guilty for allowing myself to be dragged into this madness, and yet I felt I had had little choice. After recovering from my ordeal, I figured out what had happened. I remembered at school that I had had an inexplicable fascination with the period of 16th century German history, the Bayernkrieg, the Peasants' Revolt. I had felt great sympathy for their cause, for their leader, Thomas Dashmünzer, and for the thousands who were put to death after the revolt failed. And now I had seen it at first hand, the brutal reality in all its detail, right down to the knitting pattern of the woolen coat and the brooch on my shoulder, and the enemy I had brought with me over four centuries. The other part of me, the observer, recognized the lord of the manor instantly. It was my supervisor at the hospital. They each had the same eyes with the same presence behind them. Next headline, how past lives are experienced. The great difference between traveling into another dimension and visiting a past life lies in the fact of dual consciousness. There are literally two of you, one the observer and the other the observed. While the observer has full insight into the observed down to the most intimate detail and is privy to every thought and feeling the observed has no knowledge, idea or even an inkling that they are being watched by their future self. Equally, the observer has no influence over the observed. What is fascinating is that the past life event is not an experience like a detached memory or picture, but is experienced in a here and now environment with the same reality as if it happened in real life. This throws our whole concept of time and space into question. One has to be clear about the reality of the past life experience. It is not a dream, not a hallucination or some kind of vision. If you had an experience of being a Roman soldier, you would actually be that soldier, feel the armor on your body, talk to your mates, think about your family left behind, feel the ground underneath your feet, all in glorious reality with a sense of the present indistinguishable from any time you spend in this life, here, now. 56 Experiencing a past life while out of the body is the closest man will get to real time travel. Can he influence events? No, he can't. He is compelled to go along with the decisions he made no matter how wrong they feel. The observer has no power, but he has the privilege or the misfortune of participating in the life and fate of his former self in the minutest detail, down to the subtlest feeling or most intimate thought. Yet there is also a strange form of detachment, which comes from the knowledge and identity of his real present-day self, from which he is also detached in the truest most literal sense. An authentic past life experience has nothing to do with imagination or suggestion. It is a total present-day experience of self in a different body and different time with the same feeling of self and the same awareness of reality as in normal waking life. The next experience illustrates this even better, because there was little eventful or emotional distraction. Next headline, the self-important church elder. 1980, no date. When I became conscious, I was walking along an aisle of a large cathedral. It was Christmas Eve in the year 1710. While watching myself walking along the aisle, the observer self was making a distinct effort to find clues as to the time and place of the event. No matter how hard I tried, I could find no clues about the place, but I saw displayed on a hymn board the numbers of the hymns and a date, 1710. The observed self offered no information. One thing was sure, the church was packed. So much so that the doors were left wide open and there were literally hundreds of people crowding around outside. I was impressed by the popularity of the event and realized that back then Christmas was still celebrated primarily as a Christian event. The crowd was full of festive spirit. I noted with slight amusement the feeling of self-importance the observed me held as he strutted solemnly down the aisles, checking that everything was all right and carrying a Bible. I was a church elder dash an official and very proud of it. To me this was a very important event and my role commanded respect and dignity. I continued to observe myself with mirth. 57 Once again, when returning to my physical self in the here now, the feeling of reality was still there with me. Fortunately, not all of my past life experiences were like those of the petty tyrant, the rebellious killer or the self-important prig. Some of my past lives would have looked splendid on any CV. In one I was on the ruling council of a very advanced ancient civilization in South America. It could have been the Incas, Toltecs or Aztec, I never found out, but I remember debating a resolution to rid the town of the constant harassment and attacks by the primitive tribes lining the highway to our imperial town, which was perched high up on a great mountain. The town was heavily fortified and impregnable against any assault. There was a clever irrigation system, which could also be used to flood the surrounding area in front of the gates in case of attack, drowning the enemy. The people of the town experienced a privileged lifestyle, living as they did in prosperity with thriving art and culture. It was felt that people from the surrounding tribes could be assimilated gradually by providing them with menial employment in the servant sector, which at the same time would benefit the citizens. I remember being the key initiator of this plan, but I found strong opposition. In the end, a compromise was reached. The hired tribes people had to wear trouser costumes to distinguish themselves from the rest of the city's population, an idea I objected to strongly. In the end, I lost the argument and the discriminatory costumes were used. Predictably, this created a strong sense of resentment in those forced to wear them, and after a while insurgency erupted. The defense systems were disabled and the town was ransacked by the surrounding tribes in an orchestrated attack. It was a horrendous bloodbath and the end of a prosperous civilization. On another occasion I experienced my life as a respected architect in charge of a large town development. Unfortunately, I was unable to put a name to my role. At another time I was the head of a tribe joining forces with an invading army after being threatened with annihilation. In the end I became a powerful general within the army under the direct command of my conqueror. Again I was unable to identify any historical details. It appears that when entering the mind and body of a past life self, your knowledge is restricted to the here and now perception of the past life. If the past life character, whose body you occupy, doesn't think about the name of his leader or the campaign being fought or what the year it is, you have no access to the information. The only time I had knowledge of the year was when I was the church elder at Christmas and spotted the year 1710 on the hymn board. I am doubtful whether all these hundreds of people who claim to have been Cleopatra in their past lives, or some other famous historical figure, can be taken at their word. The odds of having been an ordinary person are much higher, if less romantic. Next headline, breaking down barriers. Everything described so far was only the beginning of my experiences, a modest introduction to what would follow. Traveling into higher dimensions had never been my priority. Unlocking life's greatest mysteries through meditation was my goal. I am certain that without meditation none of my out-of-body experiences would have occurred. Although my out-of-body trips were never planned and I never developed a technique to achieve them deliberately, I saw them as a tool with which to achieve a higher state of consciousness. They were never the object of my meditation. When I could, I would use them to push the boundaries of my consciousness. Frequently, travels into the higher dimension came about during meditation rather than during sleep. Walking around other worlds and noting down my adventures would have been a good enough pastime in itself, simply because of the sheer pleasure of doing so. What can be more seductive than living in a virtual world where you can follow your dreams' desires to the full, responsible only to yourself? Well, call me a stick in the mud, but roaming around wildly and indulging in untold pleasures has never been my top priority when in virtual wonderland. More often than not during the experiences I have described, I was trying to get out of the dream, attempting to break its boundaries and move beyond, because pleasure, joy and ecstasy increase exponentially the higher you soar after leaving this physical earth. Once you have had a sip from the spring of eternal joy, how can you be satisfied with anything less, even if it combines all the worldly pleasures you can ever dream of. My goal was the ultimate pleasure, being reunited with the very origin of my life. Like a salmon overcoming all primordial obstacles to return to its breeding ground, my quest too was an instinct which had been with me as long as I could remember. But it would have been unnatural not to indulge in curiosity and stray off the path in order to get a glimpse of the grand vistas of our universe. I felt no guilt at my weakness. Whatever happened, it was part of the course which was my life. The universe is too beautiful to ignore, it's impossible not to become sidetracked by it. My ultimate quest for truth meant I had also to be absolutely open, to accept the truth no matter how uncomfortable it was, to be resistant to any belief system whether religious, spiritual, metaphysical, scientific or philosophical. Reality and truth unprejudiced and a willingness to learn were always the most important precepts on my quest for self-discovery. How could I have closed my eyes to a world which had begun to open up to me? I discovered early on that meditating while out of the body could lead to the most powerful experiences one could imagine, and whenever I remembered to, I tried to employ the technique to gain entry into new worlds and yet higher dimensions which lay undiscovered. How can you explain dry land to a creature who lives in the sea? When less than I resuming from such excursions, I soon discovered that the human brain was not programmed to deal with such matters. It had no means of translating into language what I had experienced. In the following years I was to discover realms surpassing anything the greatest fantasy writers could conceive of, beings who communicated in strange, non-verbal languages, sounds and songs which were used as a frequency to allow you to be transported instantly to other dimensions. Mystics of the past have tried in vain to express their experiences in words, grasping at metaphors, symbols, mythology, poetry, tales of enchantment and magic to translate their experiences into a form accessible by humans. All of them have failed. These worlds are the origin of magic and wonder, yet at the same time they are incredibly natural and real. Magic is only magic to us because it's our lack of comprehending and understanding their natural laws. In other realms, magic is as natural as night and day. The true magic and wonder is the extension of the laws of nature throughout the sum total of all the universes with their infinite dimensions. Many scientists will tell us that the greatest miracles lie in the perfect workings of nature. The miraculous perfection of nature does not stop at the gates of death. Next headline, knocking at the gates of heaven. In my quest to break into new dimensions, I made many discoveries about the functions of the human mind. Our physical bodies and our brains have evolved over millions of years to function in a physical environment. Our sole purpose is to survive in a physical dimension and procreate to safeguard the continuation of the species. We are used to thinking in three dimensions, and making sense of the world in new dimensions is an almost insurmountable task. I soon discovered that the dimensions surrounding us are not spatially separated at all, but interpenetrate each other in the same way as we can observe different wavelengths in the same space. Our brain is attuned only to visible light and audible sound. It is used to thinking in time and space, neither of which exists in the same way in the higher dimensions. Bringing back impressions from the next world is difficult enough, but it was only by impressing the images I brought back into the gray matter of the brain that I was able to recall the events. Our physical habits also color our experience in the next world. I soon discovered that I used physical methods to break through dimensional barriers, which presented themselves as physical obstacles. Gradually, as I employed these physical means, I noticed that the correct mental attitude began to form, but until then my efforts were very frustrating. The matter of the higher dimension is so fluid and dynamic that it will respond naturally to our expectations and ideas and will create such physical barriers where there are none. A Chinese sage once said, "The fool considers the miraculous as a miracle. I consider the non-miraculous as a miracle." Once we begin to chart the territories of the higher dimension, we will find no miracles, Only the infinite wonder of creation which unfolds its perfect mechanism and order continually. It does not request belief or worship, it requires us only to be and let be. It is indifferent to whether we believe in the existence of a God and is equally gracious towards the atheist or believer. It's a sign of our limited understanding that we turn to belief systems, whether they are science, religion or philosophy, but being in the pre-dawn of our evolution as a species, we can't be blamed for creating little islands of relative security in the ocean of infinity. Next headline, man-made obstacles. 19th of September 1776 Beginning of journal entry missing. To my relief, the light was much brighter, more like ordinary daytime in the physical world. I was at the front door of the house, of my mother, in an instant, simply by visualizing it. The house had changed. There was now a balcony on the first floor and everything was modernized. I went towards the front door and to my great surprise I was greeted by my sister-in-law. Being her extrovert cheerful self, she laughed out loud and gave me a welcoming hug. We started chatting, and then I realized that it was not my mother's house at all and wondered how I could have made such a mistake. But it wasn't my brother's house either. I asked her whether she knew where we were. She answered very confidently that we were in my hometown. I pointed towards the large factory building in the distance and said that this couldn't be the town I grew up in because that building didn't exist where I was from. For a moment she looked confused, then she pointed in another direction, saying that she believed the place I described must be over there. I said I had to go and wished her goodbye. I lifted off the ground but somehow did not manage to gain any great height. Wherever I looked I saw high-voltage wires crisscrossing the landscape and I was eager to find a gap, anxious not to get electrocuted. At the same time I was puzzled by the strange subconscious forces which had put them there. Were they the creation of some unknown fear of mine or the work of some unknown less than seven adversaries trying to block my escape? With a strong effort of will I shot through a gap between the wires and into the sky. I sailed easily over open countryside and then I came to an abrupt stop. I looked around. I was in the corner of a small grey room. I walked towards a window, took to the air again and zoomed off, only to find myself trapped in the same little room again. Again I climbed out of the window, and this time I was over the open countryside. But when I looked down I saw to my amazement that everything had turned white. What I saw was not countryside at all but wrinkled bedsheets. All of a sudden I had a powerful flashback to my childhood, when my brother and I jumped from a chest of drawers onto the bed pretending to be aeroplanes, and then me lying on my side studying the wrinkles of the sheet. I considered the possibility that my flying had triggered a memory from my childhood when I flew from the sideboard, looking down onto the landscape of sheets. With these thoughts still clearly in my mind I opened my physical eyes. For a few moments I considered how powerful the force of our underscore subconscious is, that it is able to create whole worlds that feel as physical as anything on Earth. The implications for our future in the next dimension seemed overwhelming. I tried to go back to sleep, but as soon as I closed my eyes I was back, in the countryside again, fully lucid and awake. It was like walking out of the bedroom door into another room. This experience spurred me on to experiment with flipping between the states of full waking consciousness I in the other dimension and physical waking consciousness in this one. IJ discovered that there was no difference at all. Next headline, breaking out. 8th March 1979. I woke up in the middle of the night with a pain in my eye. It was a grain of sand and it was really beginning to irritate me. I went to the bathroom to try to remove it. Finally, with my eye still hurting, I went back to bed to focus on the pineal gland. After 20 or 30 minutes of unsatisfying meditation, I had had enough and tried to go to sleep. But my eye was throbbing, so I focused instead on the pain until it ceased. Then I fell asleep. Moments later, I woke up again. The pain had gone but I was blind. It was pitch black around me. I reasoned that there should have been at least some ambient level of light falling through the window from the street lights into the room, but the black was solid.